as we mourn the loss and the passing of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg over this past week. Yeah, we brace ourselves for another adventure in confirmation land in the U.S. Senate. Oh, this ought to be a fun one. If you look at history, I'm getting into a little more of the numbers in a moment. The turning point was really the Robert Bork hearings. Up until then, you'll be surprised to hear, again, when I get to the numbers, it seemed to be a great kumbaya moment for both parties in the Senate. As far as this nominee or nomination adventure, I thought at first that President Trump should run on making the pick after the election. It was a great point. If you can go out to the rallies and say, who do you want picking your next Supreme Court justice, me or Sleepy Joe Biden? But when Mitt Romney came on board, to me, that was the go signal. There's a really interesting contrast, too, with a couple of senators in tight re-election races, Susan Collins and Martha McSally. Collins, she folded, while McSally wants to run on it. And when you consider, too, the level of early voting happening, decision to go now might be the key to help McSally more with the, well, you call them the Trump fence sitters. I don't like Trump, but I'd like it when he nominates people for the Supreme Court, so that could win her some votes, and among independents, too. But now we wait and watch the Democrats shoot themselves in the foot again leading up to November. Oh, you don't think it'll happen? Well, it has. You must have missed Nancy Pelosi not taking the action of another impeachment of President Trump off the list of possible things to do. As far as you look at the numbers, let's work backwards, because that shows the contrast much, much more significantly. I'm not going to go all the way back to the 1700s. Let's just go back from 2019, going back to 81. Brett Kavanaugh's vote, 50-48. Neil Gorsuch, 54-45. Eleni Kagan, 63-37. Sonia Sotomayor, 68-31. Samuel Alito, 58-42. John Roberts, 78-22. Stephen Breyer, 87-9. Catching a trend here. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, 96-3. We fall into the mud pit with the U.S. Senate regarding Clarence Thomas, nevertheless, 52-48. David Souter, 90-9. Anthony Kennedy, 97-0. Robert Bork, 42-58. What do you think Antonin Scalia's vote was? In the words of Maxwell Smart, what do you believe? 98-0. William Rehnquist, 65-33. That was a bit of a surprise. And Sandra Day O'Connor, another unanimous vote, 99-0. Question has been, though, can a nomination get through between now and the end of President Trump's term, if there is one? If he's reelected, we don't have to be concerned about this, but let's just play devil's advocate here. Again, let's roll through history. Brett Kavanaugh, 89 days. Neil Gorsuch, 66. Eleni Kagan, 87. Sonia Sotomayor, 72. Samuel Alito, 92. John Roberts, 72 days. There's an asterisk for this one. He was nominated twice by Bush, but in immediate succession. The first was to replace Sandra Day O'Connor. But when Chief Justice Rehnquist passed away, Roberts was re-nominated to take that seat. Stephen Breyer, 77 days. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, 50 days. And, of course, Clarence Thomas. Had a little drag time on that because, well, we had to listen to Teddy Kennedy preaching about sexual morality in that hearing. That was a total of 106 days. But all those Brett Kavanaugh 89 days, they were memorable, weren't they? Well, just in case you forgot, let's go back to that party and a trip down Kavanaugh confirmation hearing memory lane.
I welcome everyone to this confirmation hearing on the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh.
Mr. Chairman.
To serve as Associate Justice.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to be recognized for a question before we proceed.
Regular order.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to be recognized to ask a question before we proceed. The committee received just last night less than 15 hours ago, 42,000 pages of documents that we have not had an opportunity to review or read or analyze.
You're out of order. I'll proceed.
We cannot possibly move forward, Mr. Chairman.
I extend a very warm welcome to Judge Kavanaugh.
We have not been given an opportunity to have a meaningful
his wife,
hearing
Ashley,
on the nominee.
There are two daughters.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with my colleague, Senator Harris. Mr. Chairman,
Judge
we received 42,000 documents that we haven't
and
been
everyone
able
else joining
to review
us
last
today.
Night, and we believe this hearing should
I know
be postponed.
This is an exciting day for all of you here,
Mr. Chairman,
and you're rightly proud
Mr. Chairman,
of
Chairman, if we cannot be recognized, I move to adjourn.
The American people
Mr. Chairman, I move to adjourn.
Directly from Judge Kavanaugh later this afternoon.
I move. Mr. Chairman, I move to adjourn. Mr. Chairman, we have been denied real access to the documents we need to advise.
Mr. Chairman, regular order is called for.
Which turns this hearing into a charade and a mockery of our norms.
Well,
and Mr. Chairman, I therefore move to adjourn this hearing.
So here are the facts. Judge Kavanaugh is one of the most distinguished judges. Mr. Chairman, I think we ought to have this loudmouth removed. I mean, we shouldn't have to put up with this kind of stuff.
So it seems that you are okay with using race to single out some Americans for extra security measures because they look different, but you're not okay with using race to help promote diversity and equal opportunity and correct for past racial documented racial inequality.
Sounds like I rejected the racial profiling idea. What's the date of the email, Senator?
The date of the email is January 17th, 2002. Mm-hmm. And so have you ever suggested or expressed an openness to even in a temporary circumstance, like this email seems to indicate, in an interim question of using racial profiling? Have you ever suggested that, sir?
I'd like to see the email.
I will provide the email, sir, to
you. But it sounds, from what you read, like I rejected the concept, but I'll look at the email.
It seemed to me that you were open to the concept, sir, clearly. This is critically important because right now in our nation, there are law enforcement practices, and I think you're aware, that are overwhelmingly target African Americans and other people of color. Yet I've read opinions such as yours in the United States versus Washington that upheld a search, and I quote, in a neighborhood in southeast Washington, D.C. that you called crime-plagued, in Wesley versus District of Columbia, where you would have protected police from liability when they made warrantless arrests at a house that was in, quote, in east of the Anacostia River. You and I both know that those are predominantly black areas.
Yes.
Predominantly African-American communities.
Yes.
I understand there's case law that says police can justify some actions by saying that they were in areas that were high crime. But you know how some of these opinions, using this type of racially coded language, can further the disparate treatment of people of color with the police. And so the way I see it, and I'll give you a chance to respond, is that you're willing to consider using racial profiling and to accept police practices like heavy policing of African-American neighborhoods, but you're hostile to the use of race when it is used to promote diversity or remediate past proven discrimination.
Can I get 60 seconds?
Sir, go ahead.
Okay. On the Wesby case, there was a call to the police. It was not the police patrolling the neighborhood. In the Wesby case, the Supreme Court reversed the majority decision that had been written by other people that I dissented from. They reversed it 9-0 this past term. So what I wrote in Wesby, and I was cited, and the Supreme Court agreed with the approach that I had suggested, 9-0. On the general concept, you and I have discussed this in our meeting. I'm very aware of the reality and perception of targeted policing or police activity in minority neighborhoods, and I try as best I can to be aware and understand that, and you and I talked about that, and the Wesby case, in my view, had nothing to do with that issue in the Supreme Court.
So, sir, I try to give you some time there, but this is what I'm hearing right now, sir. And you know, and I appreciate your rhetoric on these matters, but again, you're going to be a judge on the Supreme Court if you are confirmed. I'm going to release the email about racial profiling, and I understand that the penalty comes with potential ousting from the Senate. I'm releasing it to expose that, number one, the emails that are being withheld from the public have nothing to do with national security, nothing to jeopardize the sanctity of those ideals that I hold dear.
May I read the Senate Rule 29.5, the standing rules of the Senate, for the benefit of all senators? Any senator, officer, or employee of the Senate who shall disclose the secret or confidential business or proceedings of the Senate, including the business and proceedings of the committees, subcommittees, and offices of the Senate, shall be liable, if a senator, to suffer expulsion from the body, and if an officer or employee, to dismissal from the service of the Senate and to punishment for contempt. So I would correct the senator's statement. There is no rule. There is clearly a rule that applies.
Then apply the rule, Chairman, and bring the charges.
Mr. Chairman.
The Kavanaugh confirmation hearings also brought about a pretty significant revelation. We all got to watch live TV Lindsey Graham breaking off of John McCain's leash.
Are you aware that at 9:23 on the night of July the 9th, the day you were nominated to the Supreme Court by President Trump, Senator Schumer said, 23 minutes after your nomination, I will oppose Judge Kavanaugh's nomination with everything I have. I have a bipartisan, and I hope a bipartisan majority will do the same. The stakes are simply too high for anything less. Well, if you weren't aware of it, you are now. Did you meet with Senator Dianne Feinstein on August 20th?
I did meet with Senator Feinstein.
Did you know that her staff had already recommended a lawyer to Dr. Ford?
I did not know that.
Did you know that her and her staff had this allegations for over 20 days?
I did not know that at the time.
If you wanted an FBI investigation, you could have come to us. What you want to do is destroy this guy's life, hold this seat open, and hope you win in 2020. You've said that, not me. You've got nothing to apologize for. When you see Sotomayor and Kagan, tell them that Lindsey said hello, because I voted for them. I would never do to them what you've done to this guy. This is the most unethical sham since I've been in politics. And if you really wanted to know the truth, you sure as hell wouldn't have done what you've done to this guy. Are you a gang rapist?
No.
I cannot imagine what you and your family have gone through. Boy, y'all want power. God, I hope you never get it. I hope the American people can see through this sham, that you knew about it and you held it. You had no intention of protecting Dr. Ford. None. She's as much of a victim as you are. God, I hate to say it, because these have been my friends. But let me tell you, when it comes to this, you're looking for a fair process. You came to the wrong town at the wrong time, my friend. Do you consider this a job interview?
The advice and consent role is like a job
interview. You consider that you've been through a job interview?
I've been through a process of advice and consent under the Constitution.
Would you say you've been through hell?
I've been through hell and then some.
This is not a job interview.
Yeah.
This is hell.
This
is going to destroy the ability of good people to come forward because of this crap. Your high school yearbook. You have interacted with professional women all your life, not one accusation. You're supposed to be Bill Cosby when you're a junior and senior in high school. And all of a sudden, you got over it. It's been my understanding that if you drug women and rape them for 2 years in high school, you probably don't stop. Here's my understanding. If you lived a good life, people would recognize it, like the American Bar Association has the gold standard. His integrity is absolutely unquestioned. He is the very circumspect in his personal conduct, harbors no biases or prejudices. He's entirely ethical, is a really decent person. He is warm, friendly, unassuming. He's the nicest person. The ABA. The one thing I can tell you, you should be proud of. Ashley, you should be proud of this, that you raised a daughter who had the good character to pray for Dr. Ford. To my Republican colleagues, If you vote no, you're legitimizing the most despicable thing I have seen in my time in politics. You want this seat? I hope you never get it. I hope you're on the Supreme Court. That's exactly where you should be. And I hope that the American people will see through this charade. And I wish you well. And I intend to vote for you. And I hope everybody who's fair-minded will.
Everyone, a great insight, too. Maybe even a great deal of prognostication about what the next U.S. Supreme Court confirmation hearing will contain. Molly Hemingway, Carrie Severino. Had written a fantastic behind-the-scenes look into everything that went on, and we posted a link to Amazon on our homepage for that book as well. Certainly worth your time, because their book was just gangbusters on this whole topic. So, plot your time if you're a political or a Supreme Court junkie, because the circus is back in town, and the Senate Democrats are going to be leading it.